Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC event with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for UFC Vegas 66, Jared Cannonier taking on Sean Strickland in your middleweight title contender eliminator. Very important fight, also known as UFC Fight Night 216 or UFC on ESPN Plus 74. But before we can get into the last card of 2022, we got to introduce our guest in the building, finishing up the year for us on a high note, CBS Sportsline analyst, handicapper for MMA Odds Breaker, DFS coach for the DFS Army. You can follow him at Big Marley 3. Kyle Marley, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, what's up? Thank you guys for having me on for the final UFC card of the year. I feel honored, and hopefully we'll cash some tickets and help the people that are listening out.
Oh, yeah, that's the goal, man. But like we were saying before we hopped on the air, I mean, as far as people that were an inspiration, as far as handicapping and betting, I mean, Big Marley, Yukawa, back all the way back in the day when we were first getting in, gambling legalized in Jersey was, man, what's Big Marley's picks? We got to get out there. And that's an inspiration for us to try to get to that level and like to close out the year on a, I mean, we were coming out strong and now we're going to finish strong too, because we got Big Marley in the house and oh man, I can't wait. And honestly, I think that we might have a better card than we did last week. I mean, maybe Whoa. Not, you know, that we don't have a title fight or whatever, but I mean, top to bottom, man. I mean, this thing is stacked. So please, before we get started, like this video. It helps a ton. Leave a comment with your best bet. We'll bring it up on the show. We'll let you know what we're thinking. And, you know, make sure you subscribe to the channel. It helps a lot. We do a lot of work and all our picks are out there free. So we hope you guys follow. And hey, it's Sean Strickland fight week. So check this out. UFC 281.
Sean Strickland in the building.
We got PC Strickland, baby. Look at that. Look at that handsome fella. Shout out the man. He translates when Sean comes back to Twitter eventually. He makes sure that we can understand.
Who are those two other handsome fellas, though? Who are those two other handsome fellas? Who are those guys? Those guys are handsome. Damn.
Anyway. Damn, we're looking good. Yep. Oh, PC in the house. What's going on, baby? Buffering. Prince of Mischief. The show has to start with TB and Guru lighting one up. It's the Chronic Combat way. What do you say, boys? No better time than
Marley
now.
Marley can join us if you want.
Marley, if you're in, man, you're in. But, oh, man, we got to get this started right.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers to you, my guest. Thank you so much for joining us for this, honestly, pretty crazy card. Interesting how this fight comes together, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Strickland. Woo.
Not a matchup like you'd kind of expect necessarily on paper, but like one of those interesting ones you really definitely want to see.
All right, Guru, here we go, man. We got Jared, the Killer Gorilla Cannonier versus Sean Tarzan still Strickland. No, is it Psycho?
It was never Psycho. Tarzan. He hated Tarzan. The UFC like made him take Tarzan.
It was.
He's got nothing. He might as well have a TB nickname.
Okay, so
he slaughtered our boy Alex Bohunin today. So maybe Sean slaughtering Alex Bohunin.
Slaughter Gang or Sean American Psycho Strickland. Was that Kelvin Gastelum on the far left? Yes, it was. That Guru has said it so many times. I got that blockchain vibes. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm repping Mexico, even though I'm like a heavy European Jew. all right. So anyways, Jared Cannonier, -105, Strickland -115, the over 4.5, -135, under 4.5, +105. Let me just say, I mean, I think Jared Cannonier presents a lot of the same issues for Sean Strickland that Alex Bejeda does, except he comes in with a lot higher level of competition and probably a lower level of kickboxing overall. Let's be serious. But those calf kicks, man, is that going to be a path to victory for Jared Cannonier? Training with Henderson, you know, and coming out of the MMA lab, man, he just lays into those kicks. And, I mean, that's what really decimated Jack Hermanson before he chinned him with the uppercut. You go look at the Strickland fight against Hermanson, and man, I mean, he better be on the similar type of game plan if he wants to win this fight. But dude, I mean, got to be careful how many significant strikes you're going to be absorbing if it's against a guy like Cannonier, against a guy like Baeta, like we saw in the past. So, I mean, are we trusting him to avoid the death touch for another 5 rounds? Yeah, Sean American Psycho Strickland. Hell
that's
yeah,
a good
Prince.
One.
That's what I was thinking, man. So, I mean, so overall, I think that, like, if Strickland wants his clearest path to victory, I mean, he can't just be jibber-jabbering on the outside the whole time, because Cannoneer is going to be landing the heavier shots, and all depends who's judging these days, right? So, I mean, at the end of the day, though, I've seen a bunch of guys on a great play, and I'm piggybacking, and I'll let Guru go ahead and drop on you people what we're thinking.
I mean, you can drop your play, man.
All right, man. Well, so we got Jared Cannoneer, finish only. Decision, no bet. I mean, if this fight gets to the scorecards, that doesn't mean I don't think that Cannoneer could win. And in fact, if he ends up being the underdog and the line slides a little bit, give it to me all day. He opened like minus 160. The fact that we're even close to plus money on Cannoneer, I think is fucking stupid. But if anyone's getting a finish here, I know Cannoneer has been knocked down 5 times in the UFC. Go take a look at how many of those times came at light heavyweight and heavyweight. And then Get back to me. You know, so Jared Cannoneer, he's faced Sergio Adesanya, he's faced Robert Whittaker. I don't think Sean Strickland is the guy to be knocking him down and really hurting him here. I mean, I think Cannoneer does just enough here to either win inside the distance or win by points. So I think minus 105 is a steal. If you could wait to, you could potentially get plus money, but I like decision no bet was at minus 140 right now.
I certainly enjoy the decision no bet. Because I think it's implied in what you're saying and in the bet itself that Sean Strickland has the better opportunity if the fight goes to decision, right? And I think that inevitably is what's going to cause a problem for Jared. It could certainly cause a problem for Jared throughout this fight. You look at the pay stats, and it's a problem. It's a very big problem. At 8.5 strikes pace at distance for Jared Cannoneer, Sean Strickland is nearly doubling him up at 15.46. That's a problem. You know, his distance striking, yeah, it's not, it's good. It's 61%, but it's still not as good as Sean Strickland's at 66%. Sean's very comfortable on the feet. He's very comfortable of getting in and out of range, as well as kind of just rolling with punches. I think his constant pressure could frustrate Jared. And it's interesting because I saw you tweet out, if Sean doesn't wrestle, I don't know what it, you know, I don't necessarily see him with the best path to victory. Honestly, dude, I would say the other way. I think if Jared doesn't use some of his clinch and his wrestling, then he's putting himself in a place not to necessarily win the fight. So if this stays 25 minutes just kickboxing, dude, I don't like Cannoneer at this at all. And I think that's okay. Baked in, and I think that's baked into what we're saying here by a decision. You know, if there's this freak knockout, yeah, we don't necessarily think Sean Strickland's going to be the guy to do it. And I'm not necessarily sure Strickland's like 30% jabs across 25 minutes are going to be enough to put Jared away either. You know, I think it just may frustrate Jared. And I think the key, like you said, could be the calf kicks. If he can really fuck up Strickland with the calf kicks and really mess up his mobility, then he might be able to find that finish. It's very interesting. You know, I would like to say that Eric Nixick would have a great game plan for him, but we know that Sean Strickland will refuse to follow the game plan. So I like the fight kind of going into the later rounds. I like TB's play. Fight going the distance at minus 112 on FanDuel. It's interesting. It's probably my best bet on this fight, but I'm not totally sold. Sean Strickland by decision plus 230 also tickle me fancy. Before we touch on every single play on the damn card, maybe Marley's got something sharp for us. What's he got?
I like your Cannoneer finish only. I do think he's the one that with the finishing potential here. I just see it as power versus volume on the feet. If there's a knockout in this fight, I would expect that to be Cannoneer getting it. But as you mentioned, I just see Strickland doubling him up on strikes, which will not look good on the scorecards here. So I do like Strickland to be the minute winner. And I like the opposite side of that bet as well, with a finish only, where Strickland is minus 165 on that. Minus 165 is like 62% odds right there. I would say that he would win like 70% of the time if this is going to a decision, maybe even up to 75% of the time. So I think that's where the value would be in my eyes. But you could just take both sides of that and hope that maybe you push on the other side. But yeah, I'm going to go with Strickland in this one. if I knew, like if you told me you had some inside information that he was going to be looking to wrestle here, I would favor him closer to 2-1, to be honest with you here. So I do think he has that potential to go out there and get some takedowns. If things are not going his way on the feet, if he's taking some big shots, he can just go ahead and look for the takedowns. And I think he'd have a lot of success on the ground or in the clinch against the cage. So I do favor Strickland in the fight as a whole. But I like that -165 for the decision only, because the KO is going to be a 25-minute sweat from Cannonier for sure. So that's my favorite play so far on this. But I also don't hate a Strickland money line play. I haven't got there yet, but I've been thinking about it.
All right. And I feel like, this is one of those clear, decision no bet and finish no bet opposite side type of spots. So if you can't decide and you're coming down to the end of the night and you just can't help yourself but playing both sides. But I know that's not why you guys came here, to play both sides. So I will end up choosing Cannonier. And if you're telling me that I'm getting plus money on it, man, am I a happy guy. But I'm not playing the money line unless it gets there. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no. I had TB in my week here earlier in the week with Cannonier, but I feel pretty decent about Sean Strickland in general. But still, guys, frankly, not where I'm planting my flag super hard this week. I love the protection advantage in this play. We've said it. I think we've beaten that horse. Now Sean Strickland's winning by round one knockout by flying knee, but that's
just MMA for you, right?
Yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, we could go on and on about the variance and everything in MMA, but hey, I think that's also what makes it so fun, because you never really can guarantee what to expect.
With this going to the judges, I say Strickland should win. Maybe I think it's clear, but these judges have no clue what they're watching. So it's going to be a sweat the whole time, even while the decision is being read.
Yeah, Even forgetting the most recent ones, if we just look at Sean Strickland's past fights, that Jack Hermanson fight was an absolute ass-whooping.
Guru, ass took it out of my mouth.
And it was a split decision.
Yeah.
So crazy, crazy stuff can go down.
Shady. Amen, brother. So, hey, speak about, maybe sketchy decisions, close decisions, whatever you want to say. We got our man Armand Tsarukyan back in the house, -190 versus Demir Ismagulov at +160. This one should be a fucking banger. I mean, this is like, could this be the main event type of potential type of fight here? I mean, if this was the higher weight class, I mean, I think it could have been, to be quite honest with you. As far as talent goes, Armand Tsarukyan versus Demir Ismagulov, I mean, you just don't get these type of matchups on a consistent basis in the UFC anymore on a talent. You know, it's like maybe it's just because we're at 155 or whatever, but I mean, but man, this is a fucking banger, no?
I was going to say this is the serious, true MMA fan's favorite fight. That's like, if you're a casual MMA fan, you probably don't know either of these guys. So,
right.
You freaking should. These tape study. They're studs.
So. This is the tape study King's Delight fight, what I would say. Exactly. If you know what you're looking for, high level.
High level. It's a high level MMA fight you're going to get here.
Well, now that we've gone and drooled all over this fight, let's clean it up here. We got over 2.5 -270, under 2.5 +215. And as exciting as it's going to be, I mean, damn, I think that there's probably inherently value on the fight to go the distance still. I just don't really see either guy finishing each other on a consistent basis in this fight. Ismagulov's only won by decision in the UFC. Tsarukyan has only lost by decision in the UFC. And his two knockouts, one, was pretty well deserved against Christos Yagos. I mean, he flatlines him, but Alvarez, it's ground and pound to a cut stoppage with the elbows. Where like that was nasty.
It was just a ground and pound. I think it was just a ground and pound.
Well, the cut opened up so badly though that like the I think it influenced the ref to step in quicker than
he was getting mutilated.
All right. But I don't see Demir Ismagulov like Joel Alvarez just being like, yo, I'm going to hang out on bottom and just throw up triangles as you smash my face. That's just not the type of fight we're looking at here, right? Or is it? I don't know. But I really just think that these guys are going to fight a real close fight, a real good fight, and that -190 is going to look probably a little bit silly in retrospect, potentially. I mean, I've been fading Ismagulov day in, day out as a big favorite, but it's +160. I get the sniffing around the dog here. I just think the right pick is going to end up being Tsarukyan. But you better play him by decision if you want to really take his side. Maybe just, like I said, I mean, juiced fight goes the distance as a parlay piece or just to lay it heavy. But I like The Tsarukyan side by hate the line.
No, I certainly understand that. And as we continue to go through this year and continue to be bitten by favorites that are winning, or I mean, Armin himself was winning a fight, won a fight, and, you know, maybe didn't on the scorecards or, you know, whatever, however you feel about that fight personally, you know, upon rewatch, you know, that third round is really the telltale sign. 1-2, clearly Armin. 4-5, he's kind of tired, and Gamrot is grinding him out a little bit. So it's all about how you see round three. I think the leg kicks are dominant. So I think Armin should have won that fight, to me personally. Demir's somebody who, you know, has really good in and out movement, right? Very defensive striking. You know, it's not just a statement I say. You see it right there on the stats. It's 63% striking defense. He's got a very good way of getting in and out of range. He likes to chip away at his opponent by using the fundamentals. He works the body to create openings. I mean, he does a lot of really good things. I just feel like he kind of keeps his hands a little bit low, and his output could be a little bit higher. So, you know, you have to deal with all those things, and now you have to, you know, in reverse with Armin, right? You have somebody who's just so well-rounded everywhere, probably beat the last guy he fought, and is pissed off, would be my guess. 26 years old, prime, and just, again, willing to take the fight anywhere. So I'm just not sure that Demir is going to be able to stop him or be better. Where's Demir better? That's, like, the real question, and I'm not sure it's anywhere. Maybe defensive striking, but, like, you know, as you see, like, you don't get points for defense in UFC. It's not a thing. It's not written in the criteria. So I think you're right. I think Armin might smash here. Marley, way too long without you, my friend.
Yeah, give me Armin here. I like him to get the win. I think there's a little bit of value right there. Right now he's minus 190. That's a 65%. I think that's the minimum of where he should be. So I think it could go 65 to 70%. So I think there could be up to 5%, maybe even more value on Armin. I think a striking match could be close here. Demir is very technical. He's fast. But Armin can keep this close for 15 minutes in a striking match. I think he's the more powerful striker of the two. But I think he's got a big edge on the ground here. Demir hasn't been taken down much in the UFC, but he's never faced a wrestler. He's got taken down by a striker in his last matchup. Armin is a serious fighter all around here. I think he's a future title contender for sure. Possible future champion. I'm big on Tsarukyan, and I think he's the value side. Give me him, money line.
I like that, man. That's great. And you know what? I think I just have some PTSD from the last time I laid chalk on Tsarukyan, but I'm getting an even better line against a worse fighter, and is Magulov than Gamrot.
Yeah, I mean, he could have got that win, and Demir could have got a loss in his last fight.
Yeah.
I mean, as we mentioned, the judges have no idea really what they're looking at, but
I
had a bet on Armin that night, and I wouldn't change it.
And you know what? And to everybody's point, I think this is really actually a smash spot on Armin, because who the fuck wants to fight Demir Ismagulov? And B, like you're just saying, a close fight that he probably should have won. He doesn't want to stay and wait and cherry pick the perfect matchup. He's fighting the guy that nobody wants to fight to continue to prove himself and keep himself active. I think you're right.
All right.
I actually don't remember what the line was in that Armand fight, so I don't know that I would do it again. But anyways, I didn't feel too bad about it.
It was like minus 230 or something. That's like where my brain goes. I'll pull it up.
Yeah, maybe that's a little high. I did play it out closer than that, so maybe I wouldn't have done it again. But I felt good about him. I felt good about that bet throughout the fight.
Yeah, it's his level of talent dictates that he can get a price like that. I understand what you're saying. So yeah, all right.
-240 against Gamrot, who is +220.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe that's a bit high, but still, I feel like if they'd run that back, you know, 100 times, maybe that was the worst Armand's gonna look. I just think he is a way better fighter, really, than most of the division.
He certainly should have made the improvements from then to now as well.
True. Yeah. Only 26 years old.
Yeah. So, all right. Awesome. So now we're going to move on to a little short notice matchup here. We got Amir Albazi, the prince, taking on Alessandro Costa. All right. Listen, I'm just going to put it this way. If the majority of this guy's wins are by submission, and he's coming into the UFC on short notice to face noted submission specialist Amir Albazi, I'm not feeling so great about the prospects for Costa, and neither is the money line. But have you guys done any more digging into a reason why we should be looking at Costa before we overlook someone, or is it this just kind of like, welcome to the UFC, you know?
Well, so he
didn't get a contract on Contender Series, right?
Right. So he had he opened up the first week of Dana White Contender Series. He was that first fight where there was 2 strikes to 4 strikes, and Dana White ripped into everyone and didn't give our boy Dennis Bazookia a contract because of it. But Alessandro, like I said, Costa was the one that kicked off that card, won the fight as a heavy favorite, and really didn't do much of anything against the bigger guy. Didn't really look very good. Didn't open up. Nothing. And now Albazi, unfortunately, he was supposed to be getting a big name guy. He was supposed to be getting Alex Perez. He was supposed to be getting Brandon Royval. Instead, both guys fall out and they give a guy a contract who was, you know, decent enough, I guess, to get one of these, you know, 15-15 four fight deals, you know, off Dana White Contender Series. But, you know, they didn't give it to him because he made a statement. So now he gets it here. So still shout out Dennis Bazookia, deserves a contract. Should absolutely be getting there. But regardless, in this time since Dana White Contender Series, he knocked out a 6-3 Carlos Gomez in 12 seconds. That's it. That's all he's done. So then he gets to the UFC here. I did see a little bit of offensive grappling at him, right? Because I think maybe Albazi's takedown defense might be his one hole. I just don't think Costa's the guy to exploit it. So I think trying to find your Amir Albazi prop is probably the best way to go about this fight.
I haven't looked at the props much on this card, but I didn't see anything from this Costa guy that makes me think he can beat Albazi. I think Albazi's really good everywhere. I think he's going to be the better grappler here, the better wrestler. the last fight that Costa was in, it would almost look like in the movies where the guy throws one punch and the other guy just falls flat on his face, basically. There was nothing to the fight. It was just showed that he has power. I mean, I guess he could possibly do that to Albazi, but Albazi can do that to him as well. And I think Albazi's the better fighter everywhere throughout the course of 15 minutes. I would say I'd rather be on the favorite than the underdog in this one.
That, you know, you do make a good point, and it is something worth noting. Costa's power is significant. It's real. It's absolutely real, especially at this lighter division here at flyweight. Albazi is somebody who is absolutely wrestler grappler first, but as we've seen on tape, has made significant improvements, leaps and bounds in his striking, you know, from fight to fight here. But he Costa might be the more fluid striker, but again, like, we don't even see him throw anything. So yeah, Albazi smash.
Smash. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, are you guys good to move on that one?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Beautiful. That's a time saver right there. So now we got actually a really fun fight here. We got Alex Caceres versus Julian Juicy J Erosa. Bruce Leroy, by the way, versus Juicy J. Nice nicknames here.
Those are good ones.
Yeah, solid. No need for TB here.
Ever, actually.
Jesus. All right, so we got Caceres plus 145 and Erosa minus 170. Over 2.5 minus 160. And the under 2.5 at plus 130. I think that from watching Juicy J tape, it's clear that two things are the bane of his existence. It's when opponents have one punch power and can get him out of there in the first round, or when he can be grappled extensively. He's been taken down 7 out of 14 times that he's been faced, and he has a striking defense from distance of 49%. Very clear holes in his game, especially for a guy that has 12% control to be giving up 12% control himself. It just means it depends on the level of grappler when he fights them. So that brings us back to our boy, Alex Caceres. He faces similar type of stuff in his game, you know, 24% control rate for his opponents, but he's got 13% himself. And I think that it's one of those guys that has 26 total UFC fights. So you kind of want to look in on like sections of it rather than the whole thing, because he really has grown up throughout his career here. Bruce Leroy, I mean, the one thing I'll say is elite distance defense. Good luck Juicy J getting into a firefight and like coaxing a firefight out of Caceres. Because I mean, like, Caceres is just a bit more defensively sound, you know, no matter what the tale. And I know Sang-Woo Choi fight, not so great a look. not so great a look. But I think Choi's got a shit ton more power than Juicy J. What I will say is that they have just about the same reach here. And Caceres having better distance accuracy, much better distance defense, and also just having a better grappling game overall, I think. Rather than focusing on tiring guys out, he's much more of like a slick backpacker, make something happen quickly type of guy. And that's a lot more dangerous than the type of game that Erosa plays, where he needs to get you to the third round to wear you down to really threaten a finish. So Caceres plus 145, I think there's plenty of value.
I think we end up on the same side, and the fact that I don't necessarily understand why Juicy J would be so heavily favored, right? Alex Caceres, somebody who was on a five fight win streak, and then fights Sadiq Youssef, who's absolutely top 15, like savage, would I think he would smash Julian Erosa. Like, that's not even a fight they consider booking. So, you know, Caceres is somebody that is difficult to deal with, right? He's unorthodox in the way that he strikes. He's got really good striking defense. Look at that, 64%. He's a UFC vet, 26 total UFC fights. That's crazy amount. He's somebody we've watched grown up inside the UFC. So to have such a large sample size and still have 64% defense, that's crazy. And I actually think it may negate Julian Erosa's best thing, which is his pace. If your pace is high and you're striking heavy, but you're not hitting Alex Caceres, you're going to be tired. And we've seen Julian Erosa gas out as well. So I feel like Julian Erosa needs a finish, or he's not going to win this fight. And I think Alex Caceres is somebody that can get a sub, as he's been, as Julian Erosa has been sub before. And I think Alex Caceres is somebody that could end up actually winning a decision. So give me Alex Caceres here, plus 145.
I'm going to have to disagree with you guys on this one, boys. I like Erosa. I really just think Erosa is the better fighter everywhere, except, I mean, defensively, he absorbs a lot of punches. Caceres is good defensively, but Caceres doesn't throw as many punches as Erosa. I just think Erosa is going to be the higher volume striker, the more dangerous striker. I think he's probably the better wrestler of the two. Grappling's probably close, but my issue with Erosa has always been his chin, and I'm not too concerned about Caceres knocking him out. I'd be a little bit more concerned about him getting submitted by Caceres. So for the same line as the money line, you can get decision only Erosa. I think he would win the decision. I think he would be, I mean, again, judges, you got to trust judges. But in my eyes, I think Erosa would be a clear 2-3 round winner in this one. And I also think he's the more dangerous fighter as well. So I don't hate the money line value on this one. but right now I have no bet on it. Erosa is on my possible plays list, though. I don't know if I would just take a prop and go with the decision only, or take the money line and actually track the bet. But Erosa is a possible play for me.
You know, and to your point, Kyle, and you make very good points. You look back at the Sungwoo Choi fight for Alex Caceres, and he gets absolutely mauled, dropped badly in that fight, hurt really bad, but is then, I believe, kneed or
in the face
while down. So he gets a chance to recover. Sungwoo Choi's down a point, kind of gasses out. Alex Caceres takes over. I think to your point, right, Julian Erosa might be able to really hurt him badly early. So I might like that. If you like Julian Erosa, I kind of like him early. Do you like that kind of maybe a finish prop play on Julian Erosa?
I think I picked him to win the decision, so I would probably just stick. And I see value as it is, so I would just stick money line or that same line on the decision only, just because I don't trust him to not get finished. It's not that I trust Caceres' finishing ability. It's just that I don't trust Erosa's chin to hold up really against anybody, to be honest with you. And Caceres is dangerous on top or on the bottom on the mat. So I think it's just the danger from Caceres, but the minutes I see going to Erosa in this one.
Alex Caceres only knocked out one time in his UFC career. It was versus Francisco Rivera Jr. in 2015. He's been subbed a couple times, though.
Okay.
So very interesting.
I respect it, fellas. It's certainly not a best bet territory for me, but I'll be looking for a little trip to Sprinkle City.
I think it's a very volatile fight. Super interesting.
Oh man, this one's gonna be a fun one. We got Drew. Let's see. Is there a nickname guru? I don't see one.
Nope.
All right. So Drew Dober versus Bobby King Green. We'll see if anything comes naturally. Drew Greenwich and Dober. -150 Dober, +130 Green. And I think they match up extremely well in this fight. The one thing that's actually kind of sketchy here is Green is a little bit taller, but his leg reach is like 5 inches longer. So their torso differential must be crazy. like I'm just trying to add it up in my head. You're only 2 inches taller, but your legs are five. Like, what is going on there? Anyways, so Bobby is big time on the switch stances. He's got great striking defense. So Guru, I know you always point out defense. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll also see distance defense. And that's just when people are fighting at distance as opposed to their defense in the clinch and ground strikes being involved also. So that's right. One of those advanced stats that I put together down there. So, and then you can also see the percentage of time at distance. So Bobby Green is definitely a 75% fighter at distance, whereas Drew Dober, he's been controlled 23% and has been in control 18%. So Bobby Green, you know, a little bit less time, but he's been actually in more majority of control when he's had time. So I think it's quite clear that Bobby Green should win on points here if you just look at like gross striking numbers. But then you go back and watch the tape and you realize like Bobby Green's always in really close fights. Bobby Green doesn't really land power on people unless they're like incompetent in the striking and he can just stand there and unload. But like a guy like Dober with the power threat coming back and solid enough head movement himself. I mean, 56% defense isn't elite like Bobby Green's, but it's not like, you know, brawl and maul type of guy that's going to stand in the pocket and just like be stupid. And I think that Dober actually doesn't really have too much of a grappling deficiency in this fight. I don't think either guy's really going to go there first. Overall, I just think that Dober -150 is pretty fair. And I'm curious to see what they look like during faceoffs. Bobby Green coming off of a suspension here. Got called with some stuff, probably just tainted supplements or whatever. You know, it seemed pretty clear that he was down.
I believe it was tainted supplements. Because, yeah. And you can tell based on the only 6 month suspension time.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm not saying like whatever, but I'd like to see, you know, just Bobby Green had some weight cut issues a few fights prior where he had to have a fight canceled. So coming back, is he normally he's like a
actually, it wasn't a few fights prior. It was supposed to be his last fight in July versus Jim Miller, and I believe that's when he was flagged.
Oh fuck!
It was for a drug test for a fight that he didn't even fight in.
So I'm on Drew Dober here because Bobby Green is at his best when he's active and he's coming. Like he needs this fight to warm up, and then he's going to win his next three against like slightly lower level guys. So like, I take Drew Dober -150, and I don't think anybody really finishes Bobby Green at all. Like for the most part here at this stage,
to have in his last
fuck, man, fuck. So yeah, just Drew Dober money line. Don't fuck around. -150 is good enough value. Just take it.
Yeah, I mean, unless your names are Dustin Poirier or Islam Makhachev, you have not finished Bobby Green. So there's, I mean, but the thing is Drew Dober's not afraid to come out like a house on fire. So, you know, it's so funny because I was looking at it just based on paper and you look at it and it's like almost every single metric is in Bobby Green's favor, yet he's the dog. And it's like, why? Well, it's because I think it's because of the power advantage. And I think that actually makes a big deal as well as, like you said, the amount of fights. Drew Dober coming in on a 2-fight winning streak over very decent competition in Terrence McKinney and Alves. And Bobby Green coming off of, like you just said, 6 month suspension off a loss to the now champ in a weird, short notice. He did the UFC a favor type deal. So yeah, I guess I like Bobby Green. I guess like Drew Dober, and I like the fight to go the distance. Drew Dober by decision is +225 on FanDuel. I mean, on DraftKings, and on FanDuel, it is Drew Dober doesn't have a prop up because they're really lame. So I'm going to flip it over to Mr. Kyle.
I don't really know on this one. I haven't capped it yet, but I've been going back and forth on it. all week, and that tells me that it's closer to a 50-50 fight, so I would rather just lean with the underdog in that scenario every time. But it's only minus 150 fight goes to decision. I wouldn't hate doing that either. I do think they're both really tough. I see Dober having the power edge, but Green having the volume edge. Either one could land a takedown or two and have success with it. I would think that's more likely to be Bobby Green. So I would just rather be on the Green side at plus money rather than lay a 60% line on Dober here. But if you don't feel good about picking a side here, I don't mind that minus 150 for fight goes to a decision. And then we don't even care about who wins. I feel like it does going to go all three, and maybe the judges will fuck it up and we won't worry about it.
And wonderful. I'm so glad you're on the show, Kyle. You make more excellent points, because if Drew does respect Bobby's just general style ability and they kind of point each other and just strike for 15 minutes, Bobby Green really might win that out. He should be the minute winner in that respect. So I definitely don't necessarily want to lay chalk on Drew. I love Drew. I love Drew as a person. He's a great fighter to interact with, and I love him as a dog. But as a favorite, not my favorite. And it's same thing as Bobby Green. Don't like laying him as a favorite. And you know, somebody that, like TB said earlier, is somebody that always has close fights. So let's get to it. Next one.
All right. Awesome. So here we go. Well, thank you guys. I think that was the main card there that we just got through. So please like and subscribe. No, we got another one. All right. Fuck. Well, please like and subscribe anyways. We got Cody Brundage versus Mikhail Oleksiychuk.
The fight everybody's been clamoring for.
This is the one, the people's main event. But on a real note, though, we got Cody Brundage on a 2-fight win streak in the UFC versus Oleksiychuk, who has made a bit of a successful move down to 185 here, right? Oleksiychuk, kind of one of those guys at 205, was like, if he just put in a little work, he probably would look better. You know, maybe his cardio would look better. So, wow, look at that. He's down to 185. We're seeing a little success. But we got minus 280 Oleksiychuk versus plus 235 Brundage. Man, over 1.5 plus 100, under 1.5 minus 130. I think it's pretty clear that Brundage should have a wrestling advantage here. I don't know if he has a cardio advantage, though, and I know he doesn't have a striking advantage. Is the line fair, though? I don't think so. I'm not sure I want to play Brundage as a dog, but over 1.5 at plus 100, if we see Brundage with some early wrestling, and then maybe the fight gets extended a bit. Like, I don't think Brundage's chin is necessarily, like, a serious issue, per se. I don't know. What do you think, Guru? Am I losing my mind here?
Listen, I'm on the Brundage side, and not like any sort of heavy or anything, but like, what in God's name has Mikhail Oleksiychuk done in his career, in his life, to warrant a minus 280 price tag in a professional fight?
Well, he just knocked out Sam Alvey.
Ta-dooch. So? like great. He put Sam. He is the one that put Sam Alvey out of his misery. Like, big whoop, man. That's nothing. He was barely testing the waters at 185. So he finally has a young guy here. It's so funny. Mikhail Oleksiychuk's actually younger than him. He just looks fucking old, right? Doesn't he just look old? Like his face. He just has like something an old like that, face. Yeah. He just has an old face. He does not look 27. I just think Brundage is somebody who kind of on a hot streak, feeling himself a little bit, beat Dalcha champ and the recently released, as of today, Dalcha champ. He was getting smashed basically the whole fight, and Dalcha gasses himself out, throws himself into a guillotine, and he's able to snatch it. And then he beats Trayshawn Gore by knockout, like everybody predicted, even though Trayshawn Gore is the striker and he's the wrestler. So apparently he's got power in his hands. Apparently the dude can scrap. And I just think the bigger and more important thing is what I see over there on the grappling stats from Mikhail Oleksiychuk. 50% takedown defense. 50%. And he's even fought anybody that wants to really do that with him.
Well, it was Jimmy Crute, I think, did like 90% of that.
Jimmy Crute is like all strength and no technique. At least Brundage actually has wrestling acumen. And I think he's going to go out there and use it. So definitely like Brundage here. If I could not imagine laying this type of chalk on Olajejczyk. he's somebody that was fighting right like Ovince St. Preux, you know, just like terrible loss, you know, beating Antigulov. Like, bro, like that doesn't mean anything. That guy is horrible. So yeah, I mean, somebody got to tell me something otherwise. Am I huffing glue, Kyle?
No, I mean, I don't hate that at all. And I had James Lynch on my podcast today, and he said that he talked to Cody Brundage, and Cody was talking about how he cornered Dustin Jacoby in his fight against Oleg Jacek, and James Lynch was talking about how he probably was Oleg Jacek for that Jacoby fight, so he probably knows a lot about this matchup already before it was even announced. So that made a lot more sense to kind of move to the underdog side, like if I had to bet this fight. But I do think Oleg Jacek has a pretty decent striking edge in this fight. I think he could take it to the ground, have success in top control himself. But yeah, I don't want to lay that line on Oleg Jacek. So if I had to bet the fight, just give me the underdog, I guess. Money line, that is. But I don't mind the decision only, minus 200 on Oleg Jacek. I think he would be the minute winner throughout the fight. Maybe Brundage can land a takedown or two. I just don't know that it would be enough to win a round or two rounds and take it on the scorecards here. So I don't mind the minus 200 there. And if you do see the TKO for Oleg Jacek, then that's basically even money on the TKO prop. So yeah, I'd be looking for either the dog on the money line or search for props somewhere else on the Oleg Jacek side.
I mean, it's just crazy. The only guy to finish Cody Brundage in his professional career is William Knight. And that guy's fucking huge. He's just a beast. He was trying to wrestle him at a bloated, you know, he was at light heavyweight for his Dana White Contender Series. So he's trying to wrestle William Knight at 205 and gets knocked out. Doesn't mean you have chin issues, dog. Like, you know, so, you know, I think that he's got a fighter's chance in this, a wrestler's chance.
Wrestling.
So get out there and put your wrestling shoes on, Cody, and get me that dub.
All right. Well, let's keep this train a rolling. We got, oh yeah, wow. So I'm drinking the Georgian wine tonight. That's so funny. We're up to Cheyenne Blissmas.
What does that have to do with Georgia?
Oh, I don't know. Well, anyways, I'm celebrating Ilya Topuria being fucking cash money last week. I ended up betting the inside the distance, and we had Cheyenne Blissmas. I was inspired to get some Georgian wine.
Yeah, so she's got some Georgian in her.
Whoa. Probably a lot. looking at that guy, it's probably a lot of Georgian.
Oh my god.
I mean, come on, that guy's a beast. Anyways, as we reel this back in.
This is what goes on in TB's inner monologue, in case you're wondering.
Jesus Christ, I had some assistance here. But anyways, we got Cheyenne
with the wine. That's the assistance.
Ah, Cheyenne. I didn't even drink any yet. This is my first sip. Cheyenne Blissmas minus 190. Corey McKenna plus 160. And the over 2.5 minus 345. Chalk it up, baby. It probably happens. And under 2.5 of plus 265. I don't think we're getting a Von Flu choke here from Corey McKenna. I think it's pretty safe to say Cheyenne Blissmas knows to let go of a guillotine if she were to get in that position. This isn't McGrand to Granger, people. Anyways, but I don't even know if we even get to that type of place because Blissmas, you know, she does like striking. You know, she's got a pretty solid pace. And McKenna, she loves striking for some reason, too, when she's actually probably, like, a much better wrestler than she thinks she is. Because, like, when you watch her actually get to these positions and do these things, it's like, oh, great, look, you're fucking beating Elise Reed. And it's like, wait, did you forget that you should be fucking wrestling? Like, what is going on, dog? But anyway, she got back to her roots last fight, looked a lot better. And if I could trust Corey McKenna to shoot her 5 takedowns per 15 minutes in this fight, then I would be feeling pretty damn good. It's just, I don't know. I feel like I'm looking at a lot of dogs here, yeah, and I'm not sure this is the one.
I think to your point, even if she was going to shoot her five takedowns per 15 minutes, you have to, A, succeed on them. And Cheyenne has shown good strength. I'm not sure that she's the best at takedown defense, but she's definitely strong, and she has decent jiu-jitsu. So I don't know, like you said, that she's going to get subbed by a Von Flue choke, a simple rear naked choke. Like, you're going to have to gas Cheyenne out. You're going to have to either hurt her or drag her to deep waters. And she's shown to have solid cardio and be fairly tough, especially, you know, being a high volume, solid striker. That's really is where she butters her bread. So I, with somebody, again, really been trying to be much more of a dog hunter, be much more diligent in sniffing around the dogs. Corey McKenna, again, did seem interesting because I do think that Cheyenne Velasquez will be somebody to fade when it comes to legit offensive wrestling. I'm just not convinced that Corey's going to be the physical person to be able to do it, especially with a 5-inch reach disadvantage. She's going to have to do a lot to close that distance. And you've seen how much physical attributes matter, especially in women's MMA.
Does Corey McKenna do a head and arm throw?
That's a good question.
I would hope Cheyenne Velasquez drilled that at this point, but
gotta watch the tape.
All right, Marley, what do you think, man? What do you got here?
Yeah, I'd rather take the underdog shot in this one. I just don't really see any value in a 65% betting line on Velasquez. Like, maybe that line is correct. I just don't see value there. And I think McKenna is very young. She's going to be improving each time out. It's hard to trust her fight IQ after that Elise Reed fight. I definitely give Velasquez the striking edge here. But the fight that Velasquez lost to Monstrat Ruiz or whatever her name was, McKenna's a lot better than she is. And McKenna has that same path to victory. Just going out there, landing takedowns, spending time in top control. And I think she's a better striker than that girl as well. So I'm on the McKenna side here. I don't feel good about her getting the win, but I do think she's the value side. She's going to be a possible play for me. But if you want a better line, maybe take her by points, because I do think this goes the distance.
Corey McKenna by decision is +225. Yeah, no, and it's not necessarily juicy enough for me, but to your point, Kyle, again, like you said, even though I may be circling Cheyenne in terms of Corey McKenna, you cannot bet Cheyenne Velasquez here. Like, there is no way. I'm not sure if I made that clear. Like, you can't bet her at -190. It's not happening, and you certainly won't see it on my bet sheet.
Yeah, correct. Same.
TB, you're muted. So.
Yep. All right. Well, let's see. We got another great matchup here. We got Jake Matthews versus Matthew Semelsberger. We got, Semi the Jedi, I know, on one side. What's on the other side? Any nickname there for Jake Matthews?
The Celtic Kid.
Oh, the Celtic Kid. There you go. Jake Matthews. We got Semi with a 2-inch height advantage, 2-inch reach advantage, and a Jedi nickname advantage over Shinobi, the dumbass nickname. I think he has the better Jedi nickname. At least it rhymes and it makes sense. I'm just saying.
Obi-Wan Shinobi the Pillow.
Yeah, fuck that.
Because he puts people to sleep.
He also gave himself the fucking nickname, whereas Semi got his from other people seeing how hard he is in football in college. So tell me which nickname is better. All right, anyways. Jake Matthews is -260. Semi is +220. Over 2.5 at -155. Under 2.5 at +125. If Matthews fell in love with his hands and tries to play a distance game like he did against Fialho, it'll look a lot different, because Matthew Semelsberger actually knows how to throw leg kicks, switch stances, and has 3 rounds of cardio, and knows how to throw punches and other strikes to the body and the legs. Andre Fialho doesn't do any of those things. So Jake Matthews, it's going to be a slightly different stand-up affair if you play from distance in this fight. At the same time, you know, Semelsberger had a really tough time with the awkward style of Morono. So the question is, a guy that we've seen with a ridiculous pace from distance, who fights from distance at 70% and has been the distance plenty of times in his 6-fight UFC career. I mean, Semelsberger's actually been pretty impressive in his short time in the UFC. So I think a +220 is kind of an embarrassment of a line here. And I think an overreaction to a guy in Jake Matthews that was a significant underdog to Andre Fialho. And I think if you really don't agree, I think the fight goes the distance here is pretty clear play. It's like what we got -120.
Oh, I see -135.
Let me double check that I have. I'm gonna reload my my thing here because I pulled it up before we started. I have -135. Yes, they finally put up props for this fight. It's about fucking time. But yeah, so I think overall, I love this fight to go the distance. I think Semelsberger has great defensive jiu-jitsu. He has very solid distance striking. And Jake Matthews actually has a 70% distance defense himself. So, like, my biggest worry is that, like, he doesn't close the distance enough against the bigger fighter here to look as dominant as he did in his last fight. And there's no way he justifies -260 without top control. But, like, even a tank like AJ Fletcher, you know, is, like, doesn't get his first takedown attempt. You know, it gets stuffed before he reshoots a second time and goes for the double.
Absolutely. You know, that's kind of what I was going to say in terms of, so not only did Semi struggle with the awkward style of Alex Morono, but he struggled with the wrestling to start with AJ Fletcher, you know, spent nearly 6 minutes being controlled in that fight. So if you can guarantee Jake Matthews will not go the route of falling in love with his hands here and actually use some of his offensive wrestling mix and match properly, then Jake Matthews absolutely can look like a decent favorite. I don't necessarily trust him to do so. And the stats almost kind of say it, right? He lands just under 2 takedowns per 15 minutes. So, you know, I'm not even necessarily sure if that's the route he wants to continue going, especially against somebody that's going to be bigger than him, taller than him. So could be very interesting. And yeah, 1,000% recency bias, TB. I think you really hit the nail on the head. Whether Jake Matthews wins this fight or not, you have to understand that recency bias is baked into this line. Jake Matthews put on a highlight reel KO, not only for the UFC, but, you know, also for himself, a guy that not necessarily known for his striking acumen. But to your point, he had made great improvements as it showed. But also to your point, Andre Fajalio, a very one-dimensional striker, and it's how we made money betting against him, plus money Muslim Salikov. So when you can read into the tape that way, I think you can start to pick your spots. And I think we're very confident that this line is certainly an overreaction. Fight goes the distance. I do love that play at -135. Because, I mean, look at, they're both 69%, 70, essentially 70% total finishes for Jake Matthews and 65% for Semelsberger. So they actually don't get that many finishes.
He fell in love with an over. Sorry.
What song are you singing?
Fell in love with a stripper, but fell in love with an
That's
over.
That's horrible. That's terrible. Kyle, what do we got? We got to get TB out of here.
I think I've picked Semelsberger in every one of his UFC fights so far, but I like Matthews in this one. I think that Matthews is probably the better, cleaner striker, probably with more power as well. And even if rounds are close, like, Semelsberger on paper lands higher volume, but Matthews is hard to hit. I just don't see him landing volume on Matthews throughout the fight. So I see rounds being pretty close, with Matthews being the one that looks better on the feet. And if he can mix in just one takedown each round, I think that's enough to steal the round or make it a clear Matthews round. So I am going to be on Matthews here. I think there's maybe a little bit of value left in the line, not much. But I think Matthews by decision, if you want to get some plus money, I think that's a prop that you can look at +140 or so. I do not hate that. But if I was going to bet a side of this fight, I would rather have Matthews, to be honest with you.
Interesting. It's a little, some more dissension here. I like it.
Yeah, I can't hate on the angle. I feel like Semi is a line play more than like a super confident hammer type of idea. And it's one of those ones where you might circle the favorite on your picks and then have a little bet on the dog here. But I love the over. That's what I come away with in this fight, is I love the over.
I like that.
Yeah, I do like that over a lot, especially more than picking a side. And I want to see them face off. That always sounds fun.
Speaking about funny ass face offs, we got Julian Marquez versus Duran Wynn. This one's gonna be a fucking circus show when it comes to the face off here. We got 6'2" versus 5'6". That's an 8-inch height advantage, but only a 2-inch reach advantage.
Bring back pride. Yeah. We want pride fights.
Holy fuck, man. So Deron Wynn, though, I will say, I'm kind of getting an itch here. And it might be a sickness. I might have to go to the doctor. But minus 175 Marquez, plus 150 Wynn. But I'm looking at a guy. It's over 1.5, minus 155. I fucking love the over 1.5. Under 1.5, plus 125. But why I'm kind of sickly thinking I might be on Wynn here is, look at a guy that's got a 29% control rate versus someone that's got a 37% opponent control rate. And I mean, Julian Marquez, if you're getting out wrestled by Mackie Pitolo for extended periods of your life, it's really not such a good look, my friend. And I know Deron Wynn. I would really like plus 250 instead of plus 150. It's like the odds makers know there's some shit going on with James Krause, and Marquez needed to leave the gym. And, you know, like that's his homie. Like that's like the every guy that Krause was cornering, Marquez was with him. So that's kind of a gigantic deal for Marquez not having Krause with him at this point. So there's a few factors that make me do it, but you're going to like it, – it's like Cuban Missile Crisis versus Oompa Loompa Crisis when it comes to the face-off, and it's going to be crazy.
I also heard from a very reliable source that Julian Marquez drives a Fiat. So I don't know if that helps him or hurts him, but I think it may hurt him here. Yeah, listen, I love me a little Deron Wynn, and here's why. You see, please don't touch Wynn. He's not winning. That's a good one. Listen, he may not win, but let me tell you something. Did you watch that fight with Phil Hawes? He will fucking die for your money. He will die for your money. He's got that dog in him, as TB is freaking out. He's got that dog in him. So I actually think that if he wants to go make a couple improvements and fight off Julian Marquez and just wrestle the shit out of him and try to win a decision and try to get some judges to be on his feel bad for him because he's so small and win a decision with his wrestling and his no volume striking, I think maybe he could do it. I just don't necessarily like Julian Marquez because he's got low output, and I mean his power is decent, but it's not necessarily amazing. And I'm kind of annoyed I took a dog shot on him versus Gregory Rodriguez and he got his brain scrambled in 3 minutes. So, and we haven't seen him in 6 months since that knockout. And his coach is probably going to jail, is being interviewed by the FBI. So, give me Deron Wynn. Let's go.
He should just have Kendra Lust corner him, to be honest with you. He fights in Vegas, right?
They do a podcast together. They're like really close friends.
I know, right? It would be bad to see her in the corner, go back, you know, whatever. But just a thought. I don't mind Wynn on the money line either. I do think he is the minute winner in this fight with his wrestling ability. But the way I would play the Wynn side, just the money line decision only, you got to pay some juice with that at minus 150. But if this goes the distance, I feel like he can throw enough volume on the feet to possibly win there. But the wrestling is really good at what's going to get it done. He could rack up 5-10 takedowns in this fight and just clearly win each round. And then the way to bet Marquez would just be inside the distance at even money or plus money, because if there is a finish in this fight, whether it be a knockout or a submission, I think that's going to be on the Marquez side. So those would be the two ways I would play it. Win on decision only or Marquez inside the distance. I'm going to pick Marquez inside the distance, but no real faith. And if I had to bet the fight, I'd rather take the dog.
The Cuban Missile Crisis. What a wild nickname. Just absolutely bonkers.
Amazing. I don't like, that's one of the top nicknames out there, I think.
That's really wild.
Right. Both of them just took an unbelievable amount of damage in their last fight, though. So who knows what their chins are going to look like moving forward.
That's a great interesting point. Too.
But to that point, they both might be a little like trepidatious and kind of want to get out there for 15 and not even take like throw too much. More yeah, sparring.
It's a
like more
real
sparring.
Interesting matchup.
Yeah.
Trepidatious, baby.
Trepidatious.
Right. Yeah, I don't even know
what that means.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a word. We're going to have Guru do some research.
I don't need to do research. It's a fucking word. You do research, Webster.
All right. So we got Said Nurmagomedov versus Said Yakub Kakhurmanov. The line has already moved to minus 115 since we started this show for Kakhurmanov. to a minus 105 for Saeed Nurmagomedov. So if you were looking for plus money on Kakhramonov, you're going to be sad. sorry about that. Over 2.5, minus 175. Under 2.5, plus 140. I'll be straight up. I'm probably biased because I took Douglas Silva de Andrade against Nurmagomedov in his last fight, and I was totally underwhelmed by Nurmagomedov's performance. And Kakhramonov, I've been fading him time and time again. And I took Ronnie Lawrence, and I was completely underwhelmed by Ronnie Lawrence and how good and physical Kakhramonov looked. So coming in here, I mean, I just feel like we're getting, you know, Nurmagomedov. If you switch the guy's names and kept the tape the same, what would the line be?
I mean, come on, man.
Dead ass. Like, okay, Nurmagomedov has a lot more value than Kakhramonov in the name. I'm saying, if you gave me Kakhramonov's tape,
can you slow down before you sound silly? Saeed Nurmagomedov is not in any way related to Khabib Nurmagomedov.
I'm just saying
one.
The name. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
The betting
number
market,
two.
People don't know.
It's but they see the OVs. It's the OV. If it's a Russian versus a Russian, that's it. That's all they see. That's all they know. So if anything, that's why it's an even money fight. Because they're like, oh, they're both OVs. I don't know how to line it. So like jokes aside. And what I came away with here is we keep wanting to fade Saeed Nurmagomedov because we want him to we think that he has holes in his takedown defense. But the problem is that he's faced decent wrestlers, at least in Cody Stamann and capable grapplers in Douglas Silva de Andrade, and they weren't able to come away with what they need to come away with. That being said, he hasn't faced anybody willing to spam wrestle the way Saeed Khabib Kakhramonov will be willing to. So I find myself thinking that the fight will kind of go the distance, but still not wanting to necessarily lay the chalk on that. But that is kind of where I see it at this moment. And I wonder if Kakhramonov is not as successful in the grappling, how it's going to look. And I think Saeed Nurmagomedov just pieces him up on the feet. Like, I don't think that that's necessarily close. So if Saeed can keep it standing for a decent amount of time, I think he'll do enough damage.
Interesting. If I could have gotten plus money on Kakhramonov, I would be much happier. But now he's sliding to the favorite. I just, on principle, can't lay that. So I'm looking at the fight goes the distance here. I think both guys are, pretty solid at avoiding, finishing in the grappling. I don't expect, Nurmagomedov to get a standing knockout, given the competition that he's faced so far. It's like Cody Stamann was such a short guy and really just threw his neck out there into that ninja choke, right?
Hey,
I mean,
listen,
Cody didn't even really get a chance to get going there.
Not for nothing, Kakhramonov is 0-1 versus Nurmagomedov's. He has a loss to Umar Nurmagomedov in PFL.
Oh, come on. But, like, they're not even in the same stratosphere.
If I can,
let
if
alone
I want,
the same
if, listen, if I want to cherry-pick a stat, let me cherry-pick a stat. He's 0-1 in Nurmagomedov's that are completely unrelated.
All right. Fair enough.
I'm really anxious to hear what Kyle has to say. Yeah. This is one of the tougher matchups.
Fair enough.
I was hoping to get some plus money on Kakhramonov. I am going to be on his side here, and I do think the name Nurmagomedov does bake in some value, to be honest with you. I would give Nurmagomedov the striking edge in this one, but I don't think he just annihilates him on the feet. I think Kakhramonov could keep it pretty close. But I was just so impressed in that Kakhramonov performance over Lawrence, where he landed 10 takedowns at like 12 minutes of control time. I just think that is going to be the difference maker in this fight. If he's having trouble on the feet, then he is willing to chain wrestle. If it's not working the first time or the second time or the third time, he's willing to keep going for that fourth and fifth time. And I think eventually he's going to get this fight to the ground and he's going to win minutes on the ground. And I'm impressed with Nurmagomedov striking, but it's just, he's not doing enough for me to where I just think he's going to beat everyone in the striking game. And I just think we haven't seen enough of Kakhramonov on the feet to know that he has that clear edge on the feet. So I do favor Kakhramonov a little bit in this fight. I haven't made the play yet. And if he keeps moving up, then maybe I won't. But since I do favor him, he's a possible play.
Yeah, listen, I've said time and time before, I love wrestling as the dominant mixed martial art. So if Kakumanov really does get his wrestling and top control going, I think Nurmagomedov will drown. So I really do think that that's very interesting as well. So I'm just kidding. You haven't seen Nurmagomedov at this type of line since like Hany Barcelos fight. Obviously, you know, level competition. Kairos, good to see you.
Shout out, Kairos. It was a pleasure running into the main man at the PFL debacle that went down at the championship. God, pretty brutal. Got credentials ripped from us on Thanksgiving Day through email. Just if you want to see details on that, I'm gonna pull it up. Make sure you go to Kairos MMA, his channel. He's got a detail on what he had to go through traveling across the country to deal with that. So make sure you guys check out Kairos' channel. Wow. Stand-up dude, awesome guy in the community, does a lot of video content, and super talented. Looking forward to actually have a successful media endeavor together in the future. As we get away from Sad Town, we move on to another fun matchup. We got Rafa Garcia versus Mahashata. I'm pretty pumped for this one because I feel like Garcia is a high-paced type of guy no matter what. It's crazy because, like, whether he wins or loses by the cardio, like, the dude is going to dig into his gas tank for better or worse. And it can get ugly out there, that's for sure. I think Mahashata, while I'm extremely concerned about his opponent control rate, I do think he's going to be like, I was telling Guru, I'm watching the tape against Steve Garcia. I'm like, Mahashata is like two weight classes bigger than Steve Garcia. He's like, what are you talking about? They're both in the same division. I'm like, no. Just like Mahashata is a fucking giant. And Guru's like, well, how is that different in this fight? I'm like, you know what? Like, you're right. It's not like he's like just fucking like he's going to be fucking gigantic again. And look at the face off. Look at everything. I really just think like it's another. It's pronounced Misha Tate. That's pretty fucking good. Mahashata, I think this is another spot for him to smash. You know, like I think he's really good off the back foot encountering and having such a height advantage and a little bit of a reach advantage. But someone that could work off the back foot and you know use his check hooks and counters to really sit down and punish a guy that really is going to be a bit you know one dimensional. It's jab, overhand into single leg or double leg and. You know, at some point, even if Mahashata loses a round or two, I think that knockout is going to be prevalent at +110. I thought he was going to be like -200 Mahashata after the Steve Garcia experience, just like based off of overreaction. So to get plus money here, I'm like, all right, I'm interested because Garcia doesn't do damage from anywhere, unless you have your hands on the ground in a defenseless position and he can knee you in the head and then he can finish you. Your name's Jesse Rosen.
Yeah, listen, you do make good points. And who has Rafa Garcia actually beaten? Jesse Ronson, not very good. I don't even believe he's no longer in the UFC. Natan Levy, decent-ish fighter, but certainly shows his ceiling. And Humberto Bandanai, somebody no longer in the promotion. It hasn't been for some time. So, yeah, I think that Mahashata is somebody with the age, height, and reach, and the way he slept Steve Garcia. I think it's like actually, you know what it is? It's actually kind of slept on and forgotten about because it was on the Teixeira Prochazka card, which was fight of the year. But he had one of the knockouts of the year. The dude is sleeping stiff. It's bad. So with that kind of power, I'm not sure where, like, Rafa's going to have to drown him. Like, he's going to have to grind, because I don't know that he's going to finish him on the feet, right? Let's just be honest. He gets outstruck by his opponents. It says it right there, and I was going to say black and white, but in green and red, he's clearly outstruck at distance by his opponents. And, you know, Mahashata is somebody that's, you know, like you already said, has these major physical advantages over Rafa. Rafa's now going to have to rely on his grappling and drown Mahashata, and I don't necessarily think so. So give me +110 on a guy that, I, like you said, I think should be decently favored.
Drowning.
That's a good song.
You guys could be right on this one. I just haven't seen enough of Mahashate to really know that he's that good.
Agreed.
And I think that Garcia should look to grapple very heavily in this fight, and I think he can grind out all three rounds on the mat. Fight goes to decision is minus 160, and that kind of leans me more into Rafa Garcia. I think Mahashate is in play for the knockout. I think Garcia is in play for the submission. But if you're telling me that this is going to go 15 minutes, I got to rely on the grappler. Somebody that we've seen can go out there and get 5 to 7 takedowns in a UFC fight. He did slow down big time against Gritsmacher, but I just don't think Mahashate can put up that kind of pace, especially if he is having to avoid takedowns or get back up. I think he's more likely to fade himself also. So give me the grappler here. It's just hard to handicap this fight when I haven't seen enough of Mahashate to know how good he is.
Absolutely. You're 1,000% right on that. The major question mark, and you can see it again written in now in black and white, because there's no stat for it on our stat sheet. There is no, we have no takedown defense stats, nothing, because we don't know how he's going to face against it. So very little tape in terms of like kind of putting that stuff together.
Yeah, I think there was one fight out in on the regional scene where he did just get, really grinded out for the entire fight by somebody who I would say is a lower level talent than Rafa Garcia. So it's in play for him to really struggle off his back anyways.
Well, that would be very not good.
What gym, has he moved gyms from this Embo Fight Club, or is he still not really with like a high level team?
I'm not sure. That's not really something I look at. I usually listen to podcasts for that kind of information. So I would have learned that from you guys, I guess.
That's fair. That's fair. So Guru, go Instagram stalk while I introduce Brian Battle versus Renat Fakhretdinov. Battle at plus 125. Pretty shocked that the highly touted 3-0 Ultimate Fighter champion is actually coming in as the underdog in a fight before he's lost. Just kind of shocking based off of general trends in the game, I would say. But, you know, Fakhretdinov brings everything to the table that I've been looking to fade Brian Battle with, and that's spam wrestling and cardio. And I just think minus 145, it's like the only reason that Battle's not plus 300 here is because he won the Ultimate Fighter and he's 3-0 coming off of a 40-second knockout. So Renat Fakhretdinov at minus 145 could be like, it would be like best bet territory. It's just, I will probably keep it more towards a mid-tier play just because I do think Battle possesses a nice advantage on the feet, like in power. But it's just not enough for me to be like, oh, well, I have to play the dog here. No, it's just like enough to keep it from being a max play is essentially it.
Just so everybody knows, Mahashate was training at Bali MMA. So literally 10,000 miles away in Bali.
Yeah, not good enough. Okay, cool. Fair enough.
Yeah, so I happen to like Brian Battle personally. I enjoy the gym he chains out of in Charlotte. Trains with a couple cool people with like Taylor Starling. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's shown himself to not necessarily be the strongest in the grappling defense. And Fakhretdinov is a spam grappler. I feel like this card really has a theme here. It's like, can these strikers keep the grapplers off them or not? And I don't think that he's small necessarily going to be able to here.
Small kid. All right, sorry.
Yeah, you're wild. I like Renat Fakhretdinov to really make Brian's battle very difficult here. If Mr. Battle can, you know, use the cage to keep himself up, turn himself outside, and kind of keep this on the feet, you might see Fakhretdinov gas out and Battle be able to come away with something crazy. But, you know, that's all about his cardio and his takedown defense. So his cardio has been improving, but still not necessarily excellent. And takedown defense has kind of been where we're looking to really see some improvement. So I lean onto the favorite here. Kyle, my man.
Yeah, I agree with you guys on this one. I think that Battle's the more well-rounded fighter, and he's probably got a big striking edge. He's probably more dangerous everywhere, especially on the feet. But, I mean, he was taken out twice by Trayshawn Gore, who was really just a striker. And Fakhretdinov, as you mentioned, is just going to keep looking to wrestle. All he wants to do is get the fight to the ground and grind out minutes. And I think he can have success doing that. So I am going to be on the Fakhretdinov side of this one. It's just I don't feel great about it because if Battle's getting back up quickly, I think he could really put it on him on the feet. He's a guy who will not slow down, work hard for a whole 15 minutes. And I like that in fighters, but yeah, I'll go with the favorite.
Excellent. Killing it. Literally killing it, bro. TB muted again.
Man, I'm fucking up consistently. All right, well, we are flying. I am loving the pace. We got another high-paced matchup here coming in at the flyweight division. David Dvorak, plus 205. Manel Kopp, minus 245. These guys match up extremely well on paper. Within 1 year of age, 1/2 inch of reach, same height. You know, there's both switch stance. I think where we really start seeing differences is that Dvorak is he's volume dependent, front foot dependent, and reliant on having the athletic edge in his fights. And I just think that Manel Kopp checks off all the boxes as an opponent to give him severe trouble. And if a guy like Mateusz Nicolau is going to be peppering you with counters and, you know, keeping off, you know, I think that Manel Kopp is going to do even better. So like an under 2.5 at plus 115 is catching my eye, but it's like, you might as well just take Manel Kopp inside the distance, Manel Kopp knockout. If you felt like you were looking towards that under, but Manel Kopp parlay piece is kind of where I'm thinking. Just keep it simple, stupid. You can find another piece out there. You can find another few pieces. I mean, whether or not you think it's Amir Albazi or Arman Tsarukyan, but if you really are obsessed with the plus money and you don't have a big bankroll to throw down on a minus 245, there's plenty of options. There's at least two options that I just gave you.
I agree completely. I love Manel Kopp here. He's probably one of my favorite spots on the card. By the way, that parlay with Arman Tsarukyan would bring you to a nice plus 114. And if you parlayed Manel Kopp with Amir Albazi, it's -137. So still not necessarily terrible. Hey, listen, all three together at plus 165. Now we're getting crazy. Yeah, Manel Kopp, flashy striker, has shown himself at times to be low volume, low urgency, but to me, he's kind of flipped the script a little bit, getting back-to-back first-round finishes in Ode Osborne and Zaglis Zumagulov, who has gotten, I think, just an unfair rub in terms of just kind of the way that he loses his fights. I know Zaglis is a tough mother jumper. You know what I mean? Like, he is tough as hell. So for Kopp to just put it like take care of him like that.
Language, young man.
Yes. For him to finish like that, Manel has real legitimate power. And I think he could put away David Dvorak, but Manel Kopp just in general like it. Kyle, what do you think, my man?
I'm going to be on the Dvorak side. The line talked me into it. If I wasn't looking at a line and I'm just trying to pick a winner, I'd be on the Kopp side. I think he's just the better striker, way more dangerous striker in a fight that I expect to mainly play out on the feet. But at over a 70% line, I just don't see any value there. I think Dvorak can keep it close for all three rounds on the feet. And I think it would be smart of him to look to mix in takedowns. And if he can do that, I could see, you know, Kopp struggling off his back or just making rounds that he was winning on the feet closer than they should be and possibly losing them. So I would rather just lean with the underdog in this fight on the Dvorak side, but I would really prefer a decision only type of bet on Dvorak. They don't have a line out on that yet, but if they put that at plus money, I mean, a good amount of plus money, kind of like the money line is, then I'd really be interested in that. Cause I think minute to minute, he can really keep this close and he's only been knocked out one time in 24 fights. So that's not something I like to rely on in 125-pound division. Even though Kopp is one of the most dangerous guys, I would still think more times than not, the knockout doesn't come.
Oh my God, that we got Mushroom in the chat.
Finally.
Oh, there he is. Listen, I know there's some live action going down with Cody Brundage across the way. So
that's fair. Shout out.
Excuse any of our best, but shout out, what was that, Weezy and Papa Lou out there putting in that work tonight?
They always are.
Brundage on. But anyways, Mushroom, Dvorak, round three, your decision. Fair enough, man. I understand. But if you got a plus 205, don't get too cute. But I know Mushroom loves those Lambo plays. shout out to Narco and all those homies, because Mushroom loves those crazy props. Here we go. Boys,
almost as much as he loves those crazy lunches.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we are opening up the card with Sergey Morozov versus Journey Newsom. Oh, man, Mushroom, been out Christmas shopping. Happy holidays, everybody. Hope you're getting everything together. It's a beautiful time of the year. But we got Morozov minus 280 and Journey Newsom plus 235. Over 2.5 minus 155. Under 2.5 plus 125. And we got Papa Chuck, cop knockout in round one or two. Don't forget me. We couldn't forget Papa Chuck. And we couldn't forget 69 sex fun in the chat that I have to go on block without blocking Mushroom this time.
Yeah, you block Mushroom, we block you.
All right, I did it. Nice. I blocked them without blocking Mushroom, and we got it. Yeah, with the casino's money, baby. Let's go. Mushroom cash and checks.
Hell yeah.
I mean, listen, I think Morozov, if he gets to his 10 takedowns per 15 minutes here against Journey Newsom and his underwhelming, I've been taken down three times in the UFC. It's going to be a pretty clear Morozov washout decision win. I think he has the advantage on the feet. Pace-wise, the only place he doesn't have an advantage is striking defense. And we've seen Morozov get hurt and stuff like that, but that was also against, like, Douglas Silva, De Andrade. And, like, Journey Newsom really is not a guy that inspires fear the same way the muscle hamster does. Morozov minus 280 could also be a parlay piece for you. That's the fourth. I gave you four parlay pieces. Figure out what to do
with
them.
Pick your favorite.
Okay? Pick your favorite. Mix and match. Get your plus money. Have a great time. To review, we got Sergey Morozov, Manel Kopp, Amir Albazi, and Arman Tsarukyan are going to be the four parlay pieces. Do a little round robin. Maybe you have some fun.
Oh, Jesus, don't advise people on a shitty. Do not advise people on a shitty round robin. Don't do that.
If you're gonna parlay it, why not round robin? What's the same fucking thing, except you get more chances to cash out if you miss a round.
I don't know. Maybe.
All right, go ahead.
Whatever. I don't. Yeah, listen. Not too much to be said. Journey Newsom beat a guy in Fernie Garcia in his last time out. Fernie Garcia is super green, and not very excellent anywhere. You know, just kind of striking. Journey Newsom, decent striking defense, right at 64%. That kind of jumps out at me. But otherwise, not really doing too much, man. It spends 88% of his time at distance, but lands three strikes per minute. Pace of nine strikes, pace at distance. Like, it's just not high enough for somebody that's going to spend all their time at distance. And like you said, maybe will has 0% takedown defense. So if Sergey is going for 10 takedowns, 11 takedowns per 15 minutes, sure, he's not used to getting all of them as he lands about three per 15 minutes, but he also hasn't faced somebody with 0% takedown defense before. So yeah, give me Sergey here.
Yeah, I'm on the Sergey side. I don't really know if there's value at minus 280. I'd probably look to get some plus money on Morozov by decision. That's not out yet on my books, but if it pops out at plus 150 or so, like I'm seeing on other books, I would be okay with that. Another one where I'd be cool with a decision only type of bet. There's no line out on that one either, but I do think that Morozov is the minute winner on the feet and on the ground on this one. I would just worry about those moments from Newsom, whether it's cracking him on the feet and, grabbing a neck or something like that. Newsom's solid on the ground himself. So I don't love the minus 280 because I could see Morozov getting finished at some point, but if this is going 15 minutes, I'd feel pretty good about Morozov getting the win. So I'll take him to get it done. Probably 3rd-27.
I like it a lot. I do like him to dominate this fight. I think that's fairly interesting. And how does he like to win? Does he like to sub people? Morozov? No, not really. More KOs. Interesting.
Yeah, he kind of does it all.
He does a little bit of it all.
Yeah. That's why I feel most comfortable. Or maybe you want to do the over, like Morozov and over 1.5. You know, if you want to.
Yeah, like if they drop a decision only for less than his money line, I would grab that because I'd struggle seeing Newsom just win a decision.
He's been finished twice in round one, Mr. Journey Newsom. Once by Randy Costa and once by Benito Lopez.
Yeah, and I could see him getting finished here, so that's why give me that decision only. Just drop that shit. DraftKings, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, come on now. Do something for me. So thank you guys. I know Mr. Big Marley 3, Kyle Marley, the big dog, gave us very generous with his time. So make sure you like and subscribe all around. Make sure you're following all of his content out there on Twitter. That's his handle right there. Any last words for you, Marley, before Guru takes us away?
No, man, thank you guys for having me on for the final card of the year. Hopefully we go into the long break with a winning night at least. I hate losing in this stretch where we have like 3 weeks off and you have to think about losing that for 3 freaking weeks before you can redeem yourself. So let's go out on a win. Good luck to you guys. Good luck to everybody listening. Thanks again for having me on.
You too, brother.
Kyle, thanks so much for joining us, man. Really means a lot. You helped us close out a crazy year for us. Year 2 for our podcast. I believe our 80th show. So just, it's been a hell of a grind, man. And to have somebody like you on to cap off the years is just super apropos, man. So seriously, thank you so much for coming on. Guys, I'll be in Atlantic City on Friday at CFFC. I don't know if anybody's going to be there in the area. Listen, Mushroom, I know you're kind of around that area, Philly, Atlantic City, not too far, about 45 minutes. Pull up, man. Somebody gotta pull up. But for real, everybody, stay safe. Have a wonderful, happy holiday with your family, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you be celebrating. Just be with loved ones and be safe. And we'll see you. I think we're going to do a year in review podcast like we did last year. May stay active with a couple interviews. But at the very least, we'll be back in 2023 for Gastelum versus Imavov. So should be very interesting. Take care, everybody.